Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Let me begin today with a couple of sort of general statements. The first one is this. I care way more about what someone does in a Georgia uniform than I care about what they do when they go on to the NFL, no matter how much success they end up having. I just like college football better. It's more interesting to me what happens in the red and black than some other uniform, no matter which NFL team that might be. The other thing is, when it comes to my appreciation of college football, I'm not necessarily national championship or bust. As a Georgia fan, I really want Georgia to win a national championship eventually and hope to see Georgia win multiple national championships, much the same way that some other SEC programs have kind of done here in recent years. However, I'm capable of appreciating seasons that stop just short of winning a national championship and appreciate some of the other things that happen during one of those seasons. All that is to say this, that after today, I don't know that I'll think much about Jake Fromm leaving school after his junior season, being drafted in the fifth round by the Buffalo Bills, the fact that kind of represents a disappointment compared to what you typically would hope to leave school to be able to do. I'm not sure I'll think much about this beyond today because I've got great memories of Georgia and Jake Fromm together. You know, making the college football playoff in 2017, beating the rivals like Florida and Auburn as much as Jake Fromm has done all of that. Really happy moments, probably the most thrilling time of my life as a Georgia fan, have been these last few years with Jake Fromm as the Georgia quarterback. And beyond today, when I think about Fromm, that's pretty much the way that I'll think about it. Not what he became in the NFL, no matter what he becomes. I'll think about him more as the Georgia quarterback. And thankfully, as a fan of his while playing at Georgia, I have got a lot of really pleasant memories of Jake Fromm doing some really fun things. However, since we're just fresh in the moment and what happened on the weekend for Fromm, not just a big deal for Georgia fans, I would argue probably the biggest storyline of the day on Saturday for those of you watching the NFL draft coverage, the fact that Fromm did fall to the fifth round and what it means for him and what it means about Georgia. At least for today, we probably got to consider some of that kind of stuff. Now, coming up in a couple of minutes, I'll talk more about what this means for Fromm. Maybe not quite as bad as it might initially seem. But before that, let's talk for a moment about what it means for Georgia. And here's one of the things you got to be kind of, be a little careful about. Because while I said a moment ago, I'm not necessarily as a fan national championship or bust. I'm capable of enjoying seasons that sort of fall short of the national championship goal. Even though that's partially true, the other part of this is, I think, obviously, at some point in time, I'd love to see Georgia get over that championship hump. And considering how close it's been and how elite the talent level that Georgia has, it's probably rightly expected that Georgia will eventually do that. And when it doesn't happen, and in 2019 was a year in which Georgia justifiably had some championship goals that fell short, when that doesn't happen, it's right to ask the question of, well, why didn't that take place? And when the on-field disappointment is coupled with kind of some draft day disappointment for Jake Fromm, all the more reason to ask the relevant question. And this is one of those things that as a fan sometimes when you see some of the things that are being said by folks kind of outside the bubble of Dog Nation, it can be a little disconcerting, but I don't think it necessarily has to be that way. Let me give you an example. Pete DeMel is a writer for Yahoo Sports. Headline from a recent article from him, column, says that how Jake Fromm became the NFL's NFL draft's biggest free fall and what that means for Georgia. And what Thamel suggests is what it means for Georgia is not necessarily good. In fact, Thamel in this story quotes an unnamed defensive coach that knows the situation at Georgia, apparently coached against Georgia. Here's what this coach tells Thamel. He says, "I don't think there's any question the offense held Jake Fromm back. Anytime you change the coordinator position and it's new, there's going to be some growing pains." So this defensive coach tells a national writer that Jake Fromm's draft day slide was in part because he was playing at what you assume to be a deficient offense at Georgia. And this is where some UGA fans get a little nervous, saying, how dare this guy who's not even willing to use his own name, how dare he say bad things about my favorite team? But I would caution you against feeling that way. There are moments in which bad news or kind of a negative take can actually be a good thing. And for me, this is kind of an example of that. I think it's true for a couple of reasons. Reason number one is, when someone says that Jake Fromm's draft day slide was on the basis of the offense that he played in 2019, and when the writer that goes on to write this goes on to sum up that if Kirby Smart's not careful, this has become part of Georgia's reputation as a program, that it doesn't develop quarterbacks as well as it could, and quarterbacks that leave Georgia and go elsewhere and seemingly get developed better, that that's the kind of thing that can be used as a knock against Georgia over the course of the long run. That's not necessarily pleasant to hear, but it could have a positive impact on Georgia because I think it focuses the discussion on where it needs to be. This is not an indictment of a person. It's not to say that Kirby Smart hasn't been a great coach through his first 4 years at Georgia. I think he's been about as great as any coach could ever expect to be on his first 4 years in the job. It's not an indictment of a person. It's simply the diagnosis of a problem. And when you look at Georgia that has had the elite talent and has been on the doorstep of winning a national championship but hasn't yet done it, it's fair to ask, what's the thing that's held Georgia back? And I think in this case, Pete DeMille is probably correct to say it's some deficiencies in offense, the fact that they have gone from Jim Chaney in 2018 to James Coley in 2019 to now Todd Monken in 2020. It's those deficiencies in offense that have kind of held Georgia back. And Jake Fromm falling to the fifth round, even though he left school after his junior season, is probably sort of more evidence to that point. The other thing is, if you're a Georgia fan, why you should not feel all that uncomfortable about having this conversation, because while it may be kind of an unpleasant look back on what 2019 could have been yet wasn't, there's no reason to think that in 2020 things could not be way better on this horizon for a UGA. I mean, after all, David Pollack was on ESPN saying that he thinks that Jamie Newman can be a first-round pick in 2020. CBS Sports got an early 2021 mock draft up, and Jamie Newman is listed as a first-round pick in that early mock draft. Of course, these early initial mock drafts have a tendency to be very, very wrong, but the point is that even though there are some negative things being said about what Georgia did not do offensively a year ago, that negativity does not seemingly exist as a dark cloud heading over this program's head as you go towards 2020. Things can be different. But in order for 2020 to be better, results of the quarterback position to be better, offensive performance overall, in order for it to be better, I think there is something to be said for acknowledging what wasn't good enough in 2019. And the performance you got from the quarterback position, how Georgia coached up Jake Fromm, the overall results, I think there are just justifiable reasons to say that could have been better. It's the reason why, after all, I believe that Todd Monken is brought into this program to transform what James Coley just apparently was not going to be capable of doing. But by articulating just how far off the mark Georgia was, a household name like Jake Fromm falling into the fifth round, Georgia, you know, going into a situation where it wasn't scoring nearly as many points and moving the ball nearly as easily as it had in the past, by articulating just how true that is, what Pete DeMille does for Yahoo Sports, and I'll put a link to this when I post the podcast later on at theworldfamousdognation.com, I think it holds feet to the fire to say, here are where things need to be better in 2020. It's the kind of grand proclamation that Kirby Smart thus far has been unwilling to make, but plenty of media members seemingly are going to want to make for him, that things need to be better, and whether Kirby acknowledges it or not, Todd Monken steps into his new role as Georgia offensive coordinator, facing, you know, you hate to say it this way, but a ton of pressure to go out there and get that done. In fact, when Kirby Smart has sort of spoken on Monken in the past, he's kind of sidestepped that issue just a bit. Here's what he said about Todd Monken back in February.
I don't know the answer to that. I think the roles on our 2020 staff still aren't complete with our extra assistant coach spot open. I think that will develop and play out as we go along. I'm certainly excited. I know that the kids are excited for an opportunity, and you know, we'll have to see where that goes. I can't honestly say that right now. I think everybody wants to hear some grand speech of opening this up and doing that. That's not necessarily what you need. Is to be productive offensively, score points, and do the explosive plays, which we've talked about consistently.
So Kirby Smart there sort of passes on the chance to make a grand proclamation about how the offense is going to change or how much it needs to change, but other people are making proclamations in his place. As I said before, including Pete DeMille from Yahoo Sports, who wrote this, there's no arguing that UGA had a pair of ace quarterbacks, he means Jake Fromm and Justin Fields, and somehow still folded the hand. When it comes to the inexact world of quarterback development, those are the types of stigmas that help program reputations develop. So DeMille says if Georgia's not careful, a stigma, a reputation might develop of how it handles its quarterback position. That doesn't have to be true, though. Georgia in 2020 can be better. I think the arrival of Todd Monken means it's likely that it will be better. I would say Buster Faulkner kind of goes a long way towards that. And don't discount the role that Matt Luke, as kind of a offensive mind, could play in all of this as well. Georgia needs to be better. It has a great chance that it will be better. And the next time we're talking about a Georgia quarterback in the NFL draft, we may not be talking about that guy being drafted lower than people assume that he would be. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, and we're presented today by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, and we're glad to have you with us. No matter how you get to us today, it's John Stinchcomb coming up. Fun interview with him. We'll get more into this topic when John joins us. I'll also remind you that our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia make it all possible. They can help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors, and a couple of easy ways to get in touch with them online at PellaBranch.com. Website again, PellaBranch.com. Or give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom, 404-445-2979. That's 404-445-2979. They got a great deal you can take advantage of. Through June 4th, you can get 50% off qualifying installations or 0% financing for 48 months. You know why good new windows and doors are important. They can increase the curb appeal of your home, which can, in some cases, add to the resale value. They can help keep energy inside the home, which can save you money on your bills. A lot of good reasons for new windows, new doors. Pella Window and Door is great for you on that. So give them a call or find them online, PellaBranch.com or 404-445-2979. As I said before, we'll get John Stinchcomb here coming up in just a moment. Before that, on the subject of Jake Fromm, I kind of dealt with the Georgia part of this a moment ago. Now let me deal with the Fromm part of this in terms of what all of this means for him. And I think there's kind of a practical reality that Fromm was dealing with much the same way other quarterbacks were over the weekend, but also still a great opportunity here as well. First of all, as a way of setting this up, let me give you a little taste of what ESPN was saying about Fromm on Saturday. This is Trey Wingo, the host, talking to Chris Mortensen, the longtime NFL reporter who knows the Fromm situation pretty well. Wingo asking Mortensen about the Fromm fall on Saturday, and here is the silver lining that Mortensen took on this in terms of Jake Fromm being with the Buffalo Bills. Here's Trey Wingo and Chris Mortensen from ESPN.
You know, he almost won a national championship at Georgia. He almost got past Alabama in that SEC championship game. But last season, he had a streak of five straight games completing fewer than 50% of his passes, the longest streak we've seen since Jake Locker did that in 2007. What are you hearing about what Jake Fromm may be able to be in Buffalo?
Well, since you mentioned that college football playoff championship game against Alabama, that was the game where Tua Tagovailoa hit the national stage in a big way with that game-winning pass in overtime that won for the Alabama Crimson Tide. Jake Fromm was on the other side playing quarterback for Georgia. Actually had a very good game for him. Well, the offensive coordinator for Alabama who had to watch that and chess match back and forth was Brian Daboll, who was the Bills' offensive coordinator. And Brandon Bean, the general manager of the Bills, texted me that he wasn't planning to draft Jake Fromm today, but he was on the board and thought he was too good to pass up, even though you would think the physical attributes don't fit with that Buffalo climate. They are happy to have a guy like that in the quarterback room and backing up, eventually, Josh Allen.
When a guy leaves school early, the way that Fromm did after his junior season, the phrase that gets used is, well, he's betting on himself. There's a reason why they call it betting on yourself, though. There is a risk to be taken, and sometimes the bet really pays off. For Isaiah Wilson, it definitely did. Some people thought he might be a fourth-round pick, yet he worked his way into the first round. In Jake Fromm's case, the bet probably doesn't feel too good right now, drafted much lower than he ever thought that he would be. But ultimately, the attitude of being willing to bet on yourself is not the kind of thing that's going to go away simply because draft day didn't work out for you. Fromm has always believed in himself and will continue to do so. The fact is, there was a practical reality working against Jake Fromm and Jacob Eason and a lot of these quarterbacks. The league right now, from a quarterback standpoint, is actually pretty deep. So much so that the New Orleans Saints just signed Jameis Winston to be their backup. Now, I realize Jameis threw 30 picks last year, but he also threw 30 touchdowns. You know, Jameis Winston not being a starter next year, at least on paper not appearing to be a starter, gives you an idea how hard it is to be one of the 32 guys entrusted with doing so. And a lot of the other quarterbacks that were drafted beyond, like, say, Herbert and Tagovailoa and Burrow, none of them have very obvious future fortunes at this position. Jordan Love, a backup for the foreseeable future in Green Bay. Philadelphia took Jalen Hurts in the second round, but upon taking him, told him they didn't plan on him being a full-time quarterback. He'll be used similar to the way that Taysom Hill has been used the New Orleans Saints. So for anybody who wants to be a future starter in this league or a guy in line for some playing time in this league, almost everyone's going to have to take a backdoor route to getting there. And for Jake Fromm, it may not seem like Buffalo is the most obvious place for him to thrive, and where he was drafted may kind of give you a hint of that as well. But these are stories that will be told over the course of years. And just because draft day didn't go the way that maybe Jake Fromm would have wanted, that doesn't mean the rest of the career can't still have plenty of high notes for it. In fact, I would expect Jake Fromm to hang with this and eventually do everything in his power to make a name for himself. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door. For more on this topic and the rest of the NFL draft, let's talk to John Stinchcomb as a part of a Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
As promised, let's talk to John Stinchcomb. First time catching up with John on video since we've been doing the show from home as of late, but it's a good time to do a Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with him. John, thanks for being with us in the magic of video. A little different than the phone call. I guess you got to clean up just a little bit. You're looking good, by the way, so we appreciate you being with us.
Well, my kids knew something was up when I came downstairs with a collared shirt on. So they were like, where are you going, Dad? Thinking, well, yeah. I'm still in my bathroom slippers. But other than that,
you're probably like me.
It's trying to look the part.
From the waist up, you're trying to look the part. I've got pajama pants on and socks below. So it's been kind of one of those deals. Business above the waist and kind of relaxation below the waist, I guess.
No doubt, especially as we advance in technology and we start with a phone call. Now we're video conferencing, so we have to at least look the part.
Yeah, if these video technologies ever go like full-length picture at some point in time, it's going to change a lot of us. It'll be good for the clothing industry, maybe not quite so good for you and me, though.
We're going to be in trouble.
Well, what was not in trouble on Thursday were Georgia offensive linemen. What a performance it was for Andrew Thomas, not just being a first-round pick, we knew that, to really be taken fourth overall by the New York Giants, an incredible, I guess, acknowledgement of what his career at Georgia had been. And not to be outdone by that, Isaiah Wilson kind of defying some of the critics, working his way into the first round as well, being taken 29th by the Tennessee Titans. John, I know you love the offensive line game. I know that you were impressed by both Thomas and Wilson in their UGA uniforms. We sort of thought they had a chance of being a first-round pick. Now they both were, in Thomas's case, a very high first-round pick. What was your reaction to that?
First, let's start with Andrew Thomas. I mean, number four overall, I think that's a huge credit to the type player that he is. He brings the entire package. He's obviously gifted on the football field, but he's somebody that you can rely on off the field as well. And in New York, in that atmosphere, there's a lot of scrutiny. I think you saw a few years back with Eric Flowers – the type of microscope that a player is under, and he's developed into a serviceable, good, solid player. But for those first couple of years, I mean, it was brutal. I mean, they'll roast you pretty quick. I think Andrew is in a position where he's prepared for that. I mean, you don't have to worry about any of his tangibles or intangibles. His technique is only going to get better, and that's a scary proposition for a player as dominant as he was in the college ranks. So I was pleasantly surprised a little bit with him going number four, but I think it's because he's earned it. With Isaiah Wilson, I think we can all agree that he's an arrow up player. You look at his performance over the past couple years has only got better, and you feel like there's still room for improvement. So for the Tennessee Titans to recognize, one, you can't coach the massiveness that he embodies and his ability to move. But again, he's a guy that I think is going to get better. I was probably in the camp where he could have improved as a player if he came back for another season, but it's hard to argue with the fact that you go 29th overall. Mike Vrabel knows the game well as a player and obviously as a coach with what he was able to do and make that run in the AFC playoffs last year. So, huge testament to Isaiah for his ability to go in the first round. And I wish nothing but the best for all my dogs as they get ready for the NFL career.
And, of course, there's another offensive lineman, Solomon Kinley, taking 111th overall. We'll talk more about that in a moment. I guess on the subject of Wilson and Thomas for a moment, I guess we can add Kinley into this as well. You know, there's always the debate that happens after this of, well, who gets the credit? Does the school that housed them get the credit? Now that Sam Pittman is over at Arkansas as the head coach there, how much of the credit does he get to take? John, I think you'll agree with me on this. I don't get the sense there's going to be much of a tug of war about this between Pittman and Georgia. I think that Georgia's glad to give Pittman a little bit of credit for the work that he did as offensive line coach. The fact that, you know, Pittman's kind of been on social media this week with his connection to these Georgia offensive linemen. I think that's fair game because of the impact that he made. This is one of those divorces that doesn't seem to be all that, a lot of like animosity between these two sides. Pittman got a great chance to go be a head coach. You can't fault him for that. He did do good work bringing these players into the program, coaching them up. So I think this is going to be a moment in which seemingly Georgia is going to be okay sharing the credit for the development of these players with Sam Pittman, who's now in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
I think Georgia loses credibility if they don't credit Coach Pittman. I mean, for years we've beat our drums as to what a great coach he is and his ability to recruit and also develop players. And to say anything otherwise at this point, I think would be, sour grapes, if you will. So I think he did a great job. I think you look at the progress that both the first round draft picks made in their careers. You know, Andrew Thomas comes in as a true freshman and starts and played at a high level from the jump, but got better. Same thing for Isaiah Wilson, a five-star guy, gets on campus and improves. So, one, Coach Pittman brought great talent. I think these men deserve some of the credit to themselves. But the University of Georgia, under the leadership and tutelage of Coach Pittman, took something that was above average and really good and made it great. And I think that's something to everybody can share some credit in.
It's our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with John Stinchcomb. And, of course, Marlowe's reminds you that social distancing can still be delicious. You know, Marlowe's has always had a dedicated portion of their business sort of devoted to to-go orders. That's even more true right now as folks are taking advantage of that as a way to stay connected with their favorite restaurants. Our friends at Marlowe's Tavern included. Great chance for you to do that. Just go to marlowestavern.com. Find the tavern in your neighborhood. Dial up that number. Make that order. Go pick it up. If you want Marlowe's to bring the food to your car, they'll even do that for you as well. And in addition to that, when you get a Marlowe's Tavern gift card right now, and I've got one of those in my hands. In addition to that, when you get a Marlowe's Tavern gift card right now, they're going to take 20% off your gift card purchase and devote that to No Kid Hungry, which is a great organization kind of dedicated to the understanding that sometimes right now, especially when kids are not in school, they're not getting the same level of nutrition they've typically gotten. So No Kid Hungry is an organization devoted to helping get that nutrition in the hands of the children and teaching families how to cook easy, nutritious meals for their families. So it's a great organization. You can find out more about that. Send an email to info@marlowestavern.com. That's info@marlowestavern.com. Marlowe's, we're obviously big fans of theirs. And, man, during this coronavirus crisis, when so many people are having to deal with just sort of a different way of life, Marlowe's has really stepped up. Their to-go stuff has been delicious. We've enjoyed it in my household. I know that a lot of you have as well. And the work they're doing with organizations like No Kid Hungry, incredibly just exceptional all the way around. John, let me go back to the offensive line story here for a moment. When you look at Solomon Kinley, I would put him in the category of guys like Tate Crowder here for a moment. You know, Kinley's a little different than Wilson, who was a five-star. Andrew Thomas was just a four-star, but he was a very high-rated four-star, an elite recruit when he was brought in. Kinley probably viewed a little bit more of a project, but he became a multi-year starter at Georgia. If you're, you know, going 111th in the draft, there's a pretty good chance you're going to have a home in this league. Miami Dolphins do select Solomon Kinley. I think there's an element in which stories like these will kind of go below the surface. But when a guy like this goes from project to draft pick, there's a lot of player development in the program that should take credit for that. We talked about Pittman's role in this, but the organization, the program as well, can take some credit for that. Much the same way for Tate Crowder, who at one point in time was like a two-star running back. And even though he was the last player selected, he was still drafted as a running back after a terrific year in 2019. Some of those players that don't necessarily have the four- and five-star accolades who've really thrived at Georgia through 4 years of coaching, I think that's one of Kirby Smart's best claims to fame.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think development of players is a huge piece, especially when you look at guys that didn't come in as five-star, four-star guys. Solomon and Tay are great examples of that. Now, with Solomon, you look at his sophomore tape, and he was pretty dominant and took a little step back this past year because of injury, and that's probably why he's out of the Thursday-Friday race and ended up getting picked up on Saturday. So for some of these younger guys, you think, well, I get it. I mean, the league minimum, here's what's crazy. League minimum in the NFL right now is $500,000.
Yeah, so that's right.
You know, with somebody who makes a roster, it's hard to argue that fact. But for someone like Solomon, Solomon's he's a gifted kid who just didn't play as well as and I told him this. I worked with him for a couple of weeks this offseason as he was transitioning from college to the pros. And I told this to him, so I don't feel like I'm speaking out of turn. For someone like him who was as gifted and had such a great year as he had his sophomore year, you're injured. I think it cost him a couple of rounds worth of pay and opportunity. So somebody who could have easily been at the top of the second round, maybe he comes back next year and shows that it was that high ankle sprain that really was the major contributor to his play. He would probably go into camp with a little better position than he would as a fourth round guy. But he's got the talent, and that's what's good for him is you get your foot in the door and everybody's on an even playing field, but you just hate it for him to miss out on the opportunity to get better over the year, but also get the pay that comes with being drafted higher. So, sure. You know, that's water under the bridge at this point. I think you could probably say the same thing for Jake Fromm in that they get drafted, you get the opportunity, you make a roster, and it's tough to argue with leaving college with a six-figure, you know, $500,000 contract at the least. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you hate it for them because there's probably still meat left on the bone that they weren't able to dig into, unlike Isaiah Wilson and Andrew Thomas that left early, and that decision was obviously justified this past weekend with a first-round draft.
Speaking of Jake Fromm, there's a column from Pete Thamel, Yahoo Sports, getting a lot of attention, and a quote in particular I want to read to you. This is is described as an opposing defensive coach familiar with Georgia's scheme. On the subject of Jake Fromm falling to the fifth round on Saturday, says, "I don't think there's any question the offense held him back," meaning the offense of Georgia. "Anytime you've got to change the coordinator position and it's new, there's going to be growing pains." What do you make of someone who apparently knows the situation here, someone that's apparently coached against Georgia, saying that Jake Fromm was held back and maybe Jake Fromm's slide to the fifth round was caused by the offense that he was a part of at Georgia? How does that land with you?
I think it's pretty accurate. I think you look at Joe Burrow, let's take him for example. He's surrounded by top talent and a system that highlights his abilities. And if he were to leave early, let's say he left before this past season, when does he get drafted? Mm-hmm. You're looking at late rounds, fifth, sixth, maybe, just based on how he performed. Now you give him a season with superior talent in a system that highlights his abilities and strengths, and he's the first overall pick. Is that because he's so much better over a year? Yeah, I think he got better, but really it's the system that he was in and the talent that he was surrounded by. The antithesis of that is Jake Fromm. This year, his talent level wasn't as great. It took a while to kind of figure out that Lawrence Cager was going to be the guy for a period of time when he was healthy, and George Pickens is going to be a breakout wide receiver. But it took time for him to find his niche and find his role. Same thing with the overall scheme. It didn't highlight the quarterback. I mean, that's not the way the system was run. It was mostly a between-the-tackles run game, and then take a couple shots down the field. That didn't play well to highlight Jake's ability. I'm still a believer that he's a talented guy. I'm not crazy about the situation he ended up in Buffalo. I think Buffalo's a good team, but you're stuck behind Josh Allen, whose character traits are much different than Jake's. So, you know, another situation where, you know, as a Jake Fromm fan, I feel for him a little bit. You know, nobody would want for him a fifth round selection with a year left of eligibility when you've got an offensive coordinator coming in from the NFL. You've got better talent waiting for you if you were to come back, and now you're going into a situation that's not ideal. So, you know, hopefully it plays out well, but this is not the dream scenario that you'd pick for any of your guys.
Yeah, just to follow up on that in the time that we have left, you know, I'm obviously a Georgia fan. I want the best for Georgia. And when someone says there was something wrong at Georgia a year ago, and in this case we're referencing the offense, as a fan, John, that can be somewhat unpleasant to hear. And yet, as also someone who wants Georgia to eventually win a national championship, in a weird way, I think it's actually kind of good we're having this conversation, because what we're not doing is offering an indictment. No one's saying Georgia's, you know, broken and it can't be fixed, or Kirby Smart's got a character flaw that's going to prevent him from ever winning a national championship as a head coach. This is simply a diagnosis that Georgia did fall short of its goal a year ago. What was the reason for that? Oh, it's going to be diagnosed as maybe Georgia just need to be more efficient, more explosive offensively. Well, once you diagnose the problem can be solved. So I don't think from a fan's perspective, we should shy away from having this conversation if it leads Georgia to shining a spotlight on what it wasn't doing as well as it could have a year ago, and making sure that either future Georgia quarterbacks or the offense in general can't have those things said about it after another season.
We're in a business in the football world where you're going to be criticized. You're going to look at your own flaws. You're going to try to figure out what your weaknesses are and make them stronger. I think Coach Smart's done a phenomenal job of that since the day he got here. He's improved the talent level. He's ramped up the competition. It makes everybody feel like they've got an opportunity if given the workload. So this is no exception. I mean, you have to be realistic. 2 years ago, you're scoring almost 38 points a game, and this past season it was closer to 30. So statistically speaking, that's an indication that your offense isn't quite as effective as it was before. For any fan, we saw that. I mean, you watched the games and you felt like this is a very capable team, a top-tier nationally competing level team, but it wasn't quite as efficient or effective as any of us would have liked it to have been. So I think that's a fair assessment. It's not an indictment on the program, and it's not an indictment on Jake Fromm and his abilities as a quarterback. It just wasn't as good of a product as what it could have been. And that very much probably affected, in my opinion, it did affect Jake Fromm's draft stock going into the draft and subsequently the fifth round selection.
John, great stuff from you as always. Thanks for being here as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. I'll remind folks once again, Marlowe's really stepping up to help us all out during this coronavirus pandemic. To-go food, you get tired of the same old, Marlowe's got you covered there. Go to marlowestavern.com, make your order, go by and pick it up. When I've done that here in the tavern in my neighborhood, it's been very, very easy. They'll even bring it to your car if you want to do that. Or another great way to support Marlowe's and take care of some people right now, get a gift card for yourself or someone else. Maybe you want to give this to someone on the front lines battling our healthcare situation right now. Info@marlowestavern.com. You can find out more about that, including how 20% of your purchase right now goes towards No Kid Hungry, a great, great organization taking care of kids who don't find themselves enjoying the same level of nutrition they're typically used to because of the fact they're outside of school and everything else. John, so much fun to talk to you. We'll look forward to doing this again next week. Really, really good to see you.
Always good, B. I appreciate to actually see your face this time and not just hear your voice.
That's right, John. We'll look forward to talking to you soon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Fruit.
Really fun to have John Stinch come as part of the program here today. I want to follow up some more on some of what John and I were talking about there. Before we get to that, let me give a quick shout out to my friends at the UGA Alumni Association. You know, a lot of the traditions that we've come to love and enjoy around University of Georgia, really, it's been a very different kind of spring when it comes to that kind of stuff. No G-Day, you can think of your own examples of that. Commencement ceremony, postponed, things like that. And yet, the work that Georgia does, I mean, the university itself, to make the world a better place is still not stopping. And the thought process that we have about, you know, how UGA students, UGA faculty, UGA graduates fit into all that is just important as it's ever been before. That's why I want to tell you about the great work our friends at the UGA Alumni Association are doing right now. And there are really four ways you can get involved with this. One of the first things you can do is support the Student Emergency Fund. Now, what this does is it takes care of students impacted by lots of things throughout the year. Right now, in particular, the crisis sort of surrounding the coronavirus. For people who are displaced or maybe, you know, find themselves in harm's way for whatever reason, the Student Emergency Fund is an important part of that. You can also support the research that's being done by UGA scientists as they seek a vaccine or some sort of therapeutic for COVID-19. Great work's being done. You may have read about some of this yourself. Some pretty significant breakthroughs being made here. Obviously, really good research requires money to back that, and the UGA Alumni Association is helping to facilitate that right now. For folks who are getting ready to graduate UGA, they may find themselves heading into a kind of uncertain job market. Being a mentor to them is something that you can really provide as an invaluable service to help someone feel better about their future in these very odd times we find ourselves living through. And so many of you are kind of on the front lines yourself and somehow dealing with or battling against the coronavirus. The UGA Alumni Association would love to hear your stories on this as well. So let me give you a couple of websites. Actually, let me give you a website you can go to on this. It's alumni.uga.edu/COVID-19. That's alumni.uga.edu/COVID-19. I know that's kind of a mouthful, but the Alumni Association doing some really, really good work out there right now, and we appreciate their support on that. To kind of put a bow on what John Stinchcomb and I were just talking about and what I said off the top of the program, no problem ever got solved without first acknowledging that it is a problem. And when Georgia looks at where Jake Fromm was drafted, I think the university itself, the program, I mean here, has to sort of ask the question of how did what happened at UGA in 2019 impact where Fromm got drafted? Now, ultimately, the actions here suggest that Georgia knows that offensively it's got to be better. That's why Todd Monken was hired. It's why Buster Faulkner was brought in. It's why changes were made. It's why Georgia was aggressive in going out and getting a graduate transfer quarterback like Jamie Newman when it seemed that Jake Fromm might leave. Kirby Smart doesn't owe it to us to talk about this kind of stuff, you know, publicly, and when he's had a chance to, he sort of sidestepped the issue. That's his prerogative to do that. I guess my point is, when critics emerge, even though they kind of annoy you sometimes and kind of come across like trolls, those critics can eventually serve kind of a valuable purpose because they serve as a reminder about what needs to be better. The simple question of why Georgia hasn't yet broken through and won a national championship, hasn't been back to the playoff again since 2017, I think offensive issues are at the center of all of that. I don't think it's bad to bring that up, especially given the fact that it provides an opportunity for Georgia to really vanquish that criticism coming up in the upcoming season. With that said, let's move ahead and talk about our SEC through here just for a moment. And I want to highlight a couple of numbers going back to the NFL draft. One of these I'm going to get a little bit more into greater detail about as we kind of head throughout the week. But what LSU did in the draft was amazing. Now, the SEC had 63 players drafted overall, by far and away the most in college football. But in particular, LSU on this was unbelievable. 14 picks altogether. And maybe more impressive than that, the fact that 10 of those draft picks for LSU came in the first three rounds. Now, this is something that I'm going to expand upon about more over the course of our week. But if you're really looking ahead to Georgia this upcoming season, both in terms of what it may do in next year's NFL draft, but also how the draft itself can predict success on the field, it's really the performance of that top-end talent that matters. You know, not necessarily the total number of guys you have get drafted, but how many guys really played a high enough level to be kind of a first or second day pick, a first round, second round, third round pick. Those are really the differences between the truly elite teams and the just very, very good teams. 10 in the first three rounds, those are major impact players. And when you watched LSU this past season, you obviously saw those with your own eyes. So think about the guys for Georgia that are going to be factors in the upcoming draft. Guys like Richard LeCount, I mean next year's draft. Richard LeCount, Tyson Campbell, arguably Malik Herring, Jordan Davis has a chance to be discussed in those regards. A wide receiver potentially like Demetrius Robertson maybe. Obviously the quarterback, Jamie Newman, we mentioned him a moment ago. How many of those guys for Georgia play well enough to move themselves into that kind of a rarefied air category? That alone, as much as anything else, may be predictive of how successful Georgia eventually is on the field in 2020. Because if you look at some of the preseason projections in terms of preseason All-SECs, preseason All-America, more so the All-America than the not, some of the names that I just mentioned don't necessarily get that attention right now, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with being overlooked in the preseason. But if Georgia is going to be as good as a lot of folks hope it can can be. A lot of projections suggest that it could be for the upcoming year. The performance on that top end for those would-be draft prospects who not only put themselves into a draft position, but into kind of a first or second day draft position, like LSU guys did, double digits for this year, the reigning national champions. That's a pretty predictive statement all the way around. As far as how the SEC compares to the rest of college football, it is really amazing how different all of this is kind of getting here at the moment. So the SEC has 63 picks. Next closest league was the Big Ten that had 48. What's amazing, though, is how big the gap is between the Big Ten and the rest of the leagues. Let's say for a moment the SEC doesn't exist. Big Ten at 48, well ahead of the Pac-12, which only had 32 players drafted. Well ahead of the ACC, which had just 27. How about this? The Big 12 had but 21. Just 21 draft picks for the Big 12. That's only four more than the American Athletic Conference, the AAC, checking in with 17. I think it's becoming more and more obvious that the divide between, you know, people have kind of pointed to a divide between, like, say, the Power Five and the Group of Five, and that's true, but that almost obscures a more significant point, which the Power Five conferences have never been more out of balance in terms of the competitive balance than they are right now. Not just the talent advantage the SEC enjoys, but the financial advantage that some of these programs in, like, say, the SEC and the Big Ten have over programs in the Pac-12 and the ACC. And when you factor in the talent part of this as well, I mean, and this is not the first year the Big 12 has been near the bottom of this list in terms of total number of players getting drafted. It's time to stop treating these other Power Five leagues as if they are on the same level playing field with the SEC and the Big Ten. And you'll notice when I say things like this, I almost always include the Big Ten. I'm probably a little bit of an SEC homer. I won't deny that. But my affection for the league that I've grown up watching isn't so great that I can't acknowledge that other leagues also play as well. And I'll give the Big Ten some credit for that. I'm not as much of a Big Ten basher as maybe some of the people who are listening to me right now. But it's also fair to point out that there are a lot of other leagues that don't even come close to the Big Ten in terms of rivaling what the SEC is able to do. And it's time to start calling some of that kind of stuff out a little bit more. The Big 12 ought to be embarrassed. And the College Football Playoff Selection Committee ought to remember this come December and heading into January when it's selecting its playoff teams. If you are playing in a league that only has 21 draft picks, you're not playing the same level of competition. And a conference championship trophy in the Big 12 does not mean the same thing that it means in the SEC, or I would argue the Big Ten on that. And right now, the ACC, which in the past has had some really good draft years in terms of players being selected, as of right now, it's not doing so hot either. That could change. North Carolina is recruiting better, as of for instance. Miami seems poised to start recruiting better, and Florida State's made a coaching change. But for now, that league is kind of far off, you know, where it was. So the big dramatic differences between the various Power Five leagues, once again illustrated greatly by what we've seen in the NFL draft over the course of the weekend, and we'll make that your SEC either. Actually, let me squeeze in a couple more here before we get to that. Tennessee gets a huge recruiting win over the weekend. Five-star Dylan Brooks got out of Alabama, had some major attention from Bama and LSU programs like that. Tennessee swoops in and gets him. That's a pretty big win for Jeremy Pruitt. You got to give him some credit. LSU had a recruiting win over the weekend. They get Landon Jackson. So a couple of recruiting stories kind of pop up here over the course of the weekend. Georgia also got some good news in basketball as well. Justin Kier, who I think that's how you pronounce his name, Kier from George Mason, was, I guess, a little bit banged up a year ago, but going back to his junior season, averaged 14.5 points, 6.5 rebounds, had offers from schools like Minnesota and NC State, which you typically kind of think of as sort of basketball schools. So Georgia kind of swooping in and what looks to get what appears to be a pretty good graduate transfer there. So that's pretty good news for Georgia on that front, as Tom Crean tries to build his program in the post-Anthony Ant-Man Edwards era. It certainly looks like the graduate transfer here, Justin Kier, is going to be able to do just that. And a couple things to remind you of as we get ready to wrap up here. First of all, on video, still every morning at 10 a.m. And one of the things we do there is our R.S. Andrews Cooldown, taking your comments on pretty much anything you want to talk about related to Georgia football. Really good stuff over the weekend. Obviously, a lot of conversation this morning on video related to the draft. We appreciate R.S. Andrews making that possible. Air conditioning, heating, plumbing, electric. R.S. Andrews can do all of those things for you. Those systems behind the walls in your house, you may not know how they work, but R.S. Andrews has devoted its life, Dari and the whole team over there, to figuring that kind of stuff out. So check them out online at rsandrews.com. Also, check out ajc.com for your Atlanta News Now. More fallout in the NFL draft, how the Falcons performed. UGA guy Steve Hummer had a very interesting column by Jake Fromm. AJC.com for more on that and an update on COVID-19 as well. Gator hater updater. Been a long time since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. How about 1,276 days? That's good news. We'll see you tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door.